Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
This podcast is courtesy of the Zurich branch of Commerzbank AG, which offers over 20,000 publicly offered leveraged structured products in Switzerland. These structured products are accessible through a multitude of channels, including the BX, SIX exchanges, and Swissquote Bank. More information can be found at certificate.commerzbank.ch.
Welcome to the second part of the interview with Bill O'Neill. Bill, after a successful career in investment banking, asset and wealth management, where he worked as an investment strategist and chief investment officer, creating sound investment frameworks, above average investment performance alongside a highly recognized media profile, Bill moved to consultancy in 2016. He now offers advice to management and clients on macro and asset market strategy and supports in developing investment processes for new businesses. Let's begin at taking a look on how to start investing.
I'm a true believer in pound averaging and euro averaging. I think you build clearly the core of the portfolio, which is largely liquid and publicly traded. Mm-hmm. And if you can, obviously using ETFs or active funds, obviously most now you look at the industry, sort of 34% of actually portfolios are actually driven Stefan by passive structures. The theory suggests up to 80% of the actual experience you have will be based on asset allocation. The return experience, the return risk experience will be determined by the asset allocation that you actually set. Rather than actually stock picking or TA or personal tactical asset allocation. That's always been the sense really with wealth management in the years that I've been there. And I think that's really important in terms of getting the asset allocation right. Look, at the end of the day, you can build an asset allocation relatively quickly in the modern world using passive strategies. So you've got market exposure. So you're exposed to that 75-80%. Then you have the enhancement around tactical asset allocation, which adds another 10 or so. And then finally, that's 10 is really just stock selection. So all this thing that people get upset about and get really, really harried about and get excited about, at the end of the day, for a core portfolio that lets you eat well and sleep well, that really is at the end of the day driven by the correct and appropriate allocation. And that should be a dynamic. That doesn't just to be determined at point A, T equals one, and then left there. It has to reflect your needs as well. That's where client advisors come in terms of the review, etc. It's very important.
That was a little bit of my next question. So when is the next best time to rebalance, in the sense when something has become cheap or become expensive?
Not in the middle of a crisis. I mean, clearly things like, for instance, the new normal, which has evolved for the best part of a decade now, really, of low nominal interest rates, low real interest rates, a lower bond premium if you come between cash and long-term interest rates, a tendency for equity risk premium to rise, the required equity. All of that feeds into the models and all of that will essentially chuck out a different allocation. So for instance, at a very, very large wealth manager that I was up to some years ago employed with, there was a big rethink in recent years about the equity exposure, because they felt essentially that, first of all, a lot of the characteristics, returns and volatility characteristics were better achieved by using a high yield portfolio, a mix of US investment grade and US high yield.
I see.
The argument for actually holding longer term duration short-term security duration was actually a better risk, basically taking on duration risk at that, but given the world we see, in other words, that the real interest rates would continue to move down, which was obviously very, propitious or, very, very, very accurate. And so that I think was, it shifted the portfolio to a non-sovereign debt exposure away from equities, because essentially the return, the equity risk premium, essentially exposed after the event would decline over time, and that valuations would have to be cheaper to actually meet the required risk premium as a result,
And I mean, that's because that's where the world I've come from.
Yeah.
Derivatives, do they have some use in there? Can they be, and if yes, then
How would you apply them?
I would say largely in form of execution. I think basically a form if you want to basically quickly execute into a market.
Yeah.
I think the use of derivatives there to get gain exposure basically, rather whilst the underlying sort of the delta one basically exposure takes a little time to build. We would see them doing that, and I think we certainly my experience with use of derivatives has been. It's been a way of actually taking exposure relatively quickly. Leverage in these situations has to be explicitly referenced in a portfolio, and we would send obviously clear references to things like the alternative investment side, 30-30 rules, etc. But the idea would that would be explicitly dealt with more in the AI side, using leverage, or obviously clearly investment trusts, you have that. But I think in terms of actually operating a multi-asset portfolio, derivatives are seen a way of enhancing what's known as the transfer coefficient, which, the information coefficient, which is essentially around, the management skill, etc., managing assets. But the transfer coefficient is actually about the execution, basically, and basically how efficiently you actually capture the asset relative to cost of dealing.
And you see, in this case, derivatives,
They have been used. I mean, you can use derivatives. And I myself have basically come from a background where it's been very much so long only delta one, because essentially saying let the volatility play out through, say, your equity exposure or your more risky credit exposure, and the natural diversification that a multi-asset portfolio then presents, And then what has happened, of course, is that sort of structured products sort of begin to interfere with that because the risk return payoff, there's a kink, a skew.
It has a very different distribution. So, it's very difficult to integrate.
We go back into the world we actually presented with, the taxonomy, the return, the world of capital market assumptions. The long-term return from basically US equities is going to be something in the order of 6-7% with volatility of 15, based on deviation 15 or whatever. Now, if you are sticking a derivative into that, that's quite a different payoff stream. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
So essentially you're at the risk of undermining some of the foundation pillars of the optimization, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think the optimization has a hard time dealing with a derivative in it.
It can. It's not impossible.
It's not,
but it's a different form of animal, and that's housed in a different place.
Yeah. And that's why it's often you find in the alternative bucket and it can be left there. Now, often when I do this, you're trying to, find ways of listening or finding out what's happening to the market. And I think Warren Buffett once said, I've never seen a rich economist because they all seem to be know everything, but show me a rich, actually one who got it right and made money out of it. Sort of, which camp are you, or what would be your approach? Because there's so much information out there. What do I listen actually to? Who should I listen
to? Well, I think at the end of the day, I think you have to be humble. I mean, I think, the markets at the end of the day make fools of us all, really. And I think the important thing is, I think the really important thing is distinguish noise from signal.
How do I do that?
I think part of it is that don't try to be too early and too clever, what we're finding in the world where that basically trends persist for much longer than we anticipate. If you think, for instance, the new normal, as I mentioned to you, of disinflation.
Nobody ever thought.
It's way, way away. We're like negative interest rates, gazillions of basically quantitative easing. And just, go with it. But don't try to be too smart too early with these things. I often think back to the various sort of, total return of portfolios that were actually built in sort of the late noughties, 10 years ago. So many of them blew up, and then of course the whole story of hedge funds themselves and
LTCM.
Essentially an illiquidity premium, see it for what it is. But the big trends, you still have to stick with it. I think clearly, technology was one that, worked for years and still continued to work, the decline of long-term interest rates is something that's working for years and continues to work. In different manifestations, but I think it is getting more difficult because some of the secular forces are now sort of becoming quite extreme in the market, but you're saying to yourself, how can a U.S. PE, a market of sort of, you know, 20, 22 times, sits with a bond yield, you know, that can't be sustained much above, you know, much above 2.5-3%, you know? How does that, you know? Yeah, how does that present itself? How are those reconciled? And that's, I think, the really difficult thing at the moment. You know, when we seem to be at the moment basically an environment where labour share of GDP is still constrained. So basically a lot of work, the growth coming, is coming through profits. But we've seen already with populism and social fatigue, you know, that may not last forever. You know, we're already seeing serious backlashes, you know. Mm-hmm.
No. You've been with Falco Private Office now for a while. Is you know, you're obviously implementing things that we talked about. Is there something specific on Falco that got you excited? And now you are at a, I would say, much more.
It's more having some greater leverage to actually have an impact, greater ability, greater scope to make an impact. What I found interesting is actually being able to work with people around the asset allocation side, the sort of the top end of the pyramid, let's put it that way, and being able to work with some of the processes around that and with people I've worked with before. But also, it's been maybe in terms of actually looking at how alternative investments can be brought into this as well, and actually how they run alongside things from a transactional basis, obviously, in terms of actual, you know, structures, etc., original and sale, which is somebody else's expertise, but actually trying to build those into actually portfolios as well, or to run alongside what you'd see as being sort of somewhat more conventional multi-asset delta one, you know, liquid structures. And I think that's been an interesting one in terms of actually being able to try and look at how those two can marry together, you know?
And how does it work bringing these alternatives?
I think what really is that basically you have essentially the risky part ex ante, you have the 15 or 20% risky part, which is defined as being essentially for the alternative investment side, and then beyond that, then you actually have the more, say, the more conventional world. But it's interesting how the two can converse with each other, in the sense of basically, you know, in this environment, if you were to look at sort of AI as an asset class, be it sort of commodities, you know, derivatives, you know, the property, and all the other bits of sort of, you know, the less liquid markets, the private markets and such, what are their characteristics, and sort of, you know, how they are becoming more and more an interest to investors, and where basically it's not just a question of simply taking the public markets. You do have to look and model some of these asset characteristics as well, because essentially the clients are saying, okay, it's no longer 10%, it's now 20-30% of my portfolio, you know?
And they often have significant leverage, which makes them behave like a derivative.
And it's a real challenge for asset allocators, because if you want to integrate that into against something like, say, a US Treasury, or like an S&P, you know, stock, or an S&P index, how do you actually do that? Because that's a very different one. Now, of course, with technology and the prowess and power of technology, but it's a very different one. That's what I think is the interesting bit in terms of building it. And being true to an empirically based process and system where, you know, returns and risk assumptions and the diversification process is built around historical experience, you know? It's not just pulled out of the air, you know?
I agree. My last question for you. Who are you? What are your up to three favorite financial movies, and why? If, I mean, you don't have to come up with three, but
I think probably, well, but the Bonfire of Vanities would be the major one.
That's a good one,
and because of the end of the era. And I would have to say, I mean, in terms of the others, clearly, I'm trying to think. I would think probably that would be my major one.
And why?
I think it's just because it was the zenith of an era, and it marked the end of an era. You know, basically it was the extreme of the era, and New York at that time was sort of the crazy system was going on. But it clearly manifested itself in other ways as well later. But it was just that extreme. You know, that sense of entitlement, that sort of master of the universe, you know, set against, you know, a reality that in some ways was crumbling, and essentially brought the anti-hero down, really, you know.
No, thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you.
Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
This podcast is courtesy of the Zurich branch of Commerzbank AG, which offers over 20,000 publicly offered leveraged structured products in Switzerland. These structured products are accessible through a multitude of channels, including the BX, SIX exchanges, and Swissquote Bank. More information can be found at certificate.commerzbank.ch. Are you missing the sun? Always wanted to go to Hawaii? Go to halecapri.com.